Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. Did you ever have a conversation with someone that you only realized after the fact put something important into perspective for you? I owe my interest in the role projected human emotions play in human-canine relationships to two such conversations that happened early in my behavioral and bond career. In both cases, the speakers attempted to articulate the changes in dog owners' perceptions when problem canine behaviors arose. The first observation came from a friend and trainer who had a solid grounding in theology and anthropology as well as canine behavior. As we walked in a field we shared with multiple dogs on that beautiful day, he told me he couldn't believe it was an accident that dog was God spelled backwards. A celestial joke, perhaps, he noted, but not an accident. He knew me well enough to know that this wasn't the kind of sentiment I'd buy into unless he produced some sort of logical support for it. When he did, I realized that his reference to the inverse dog-God relationship perfectly summed up a human perceptual shift that we both increasingly encountered in our work. The canine transformation theory works like this. If their dogs function acceptably within any limits the people they live with impose on them, those people perceive the dogs as four-legged gods of infinite and unconditional love. But when the dogs misbehave, human perceptions make a 180-degree shift in the opposite direction. The formerly perceived canine symbol of infinite and unconditional love gets demoted into a four-legged god of vengeance and retribution. Such extreme shifts in perception may appear to defy logic, but they don't really. Or rather, they do defy logic, but they don't defy convention. The ancient tomes that form the foundation of all the world's great religions describe deities who rain down peace and prosperity to humankind in one scenario and cover them with boils or frogs or some other horror in another. Consequently, a certain logic supports that Prince the Dog could reign as the Prince of Light on Monday when he snuggles with his owner on the couch, but as the Prince of Darkness on Wednesday when he barfs remnants of some long-dead rodent carcass he found, dog knows where, on the same couch. Not that long after this more academic dog-god conversation, a client referred to dogs as the last totem in American society. According to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, a totem is, and I quote, an object, such as an animal or plant, serving as the emblem of a family or clan, and often as a reminder of its ancestry. Unlike the previous more generalized discussion of the companion dog's somewhat schizophrenic deity status in contemporary society, this observation resulted from a specific incident. When the client's beloved rescue dog lunged and snapped at a family member, his first response wasn't fear or anger, nor a desire to know how to correct the behavior. It was a sense of betrayal, so overwhelming and absolute, he struggled to make sense of it. He described his torment so vividly, I can still envision the scene years later. It was late, and he was alone playing the piano, as he often did to clear his thoughts at the end of the day. As he did, and also as usual, the dog laid on the floor and watched him. He knew the dog watched him, But he couldn't look at the dog because he knew that, whatever the dog truly was thinking, he would interpret the canine look to mean, "I'm sorry, it won't happen again. I love you." But he couldn't forgive the dog because his bond with the dog irreparably broke when the dog lunged at his child. Much as he loved the dog, the relationship was over. What elevated this to the level of an incomprehensible religious experience for him was that he knew his response was completely irrational. Compared to the average dog owner, he had extensive canine knowledge that went back generations in his family. It was the contrast between that knowledge and what happened between him and the dog following the incident that precipitated his human-canine bond crisis. It shocked him that his response could be so profound and so absolute. It was as if he suddenly discovered that God did not exist, even though he had never consciously acknowledged that God existed in the first place. It turned his entire world upside down. Granted, this person described his experience a great deal more articulately than most of us could, but the experience itself isn't as unique as you might think. It turns out that most of us can, and do, rationalize or at least tolerate what we intellectually consider irrational and inconsistent behaviors of any religious deities, whether we believe in them or not. But for some reason, this tolerance may not extend to the dog gods with whom we share our homes. Why is this? I suspect it has something to do with the unfortunate branding of family pets in general, and dogs in particular, as animated, on-demand dispensers of unconditional love. Most of us with companion animals in our lives can point to at least one with whom we experienced love at first sight. So valued is this contemporary human experience that the countless books, movies, photographs, and video clips that celebrate it gain wide audiences. So much FaceTime given to such spontaneous, all positive bonds make it easy to believe that this is the way it always was and always should be. Some people even give the phenomena so much power that they won't even consider an animal, no matter how suitable, who doesn't trigger such an instantaneous and powerful what they consider spiritual connection. The problem with this kind of approach isn't so much the quality or intensity of the emotion, but its out-of-the-blue, miraculous timing. One instant, Susie Boyd vaguely remembers maybe getting a pet someday when she walks by a rescue display in a shopping mall. And the next, she and Spot are Fluff lock eyes and it's a done deal. A match made in heaven. In some instances, human and animals don't even need to physically meet. Just the look of a particular animal in a photo or video clip on a rescue or breeder's site is enough to trigger a similar response. At such times, it's easy to forget that if something can burst into being in an instant, it can disappear in an instant too. And when it does, the existential crisis experienced is as painful as that experienced by any minister or novitiate who suddenly realizes that faith in their chosen deity no longer exists. From a bond perspective, the out-of-the-blue incidents that trigger these crises are as varied as they are capricious. In the realm of canine aggression, some kinds of aggression, such as that involving her or a family member, possess the power to instantly destroy the bond between Bonnie and her dog. Meanwhile, her neighbor believes the opposite. he considers it within the normal range of probability that his dog will bite him or a family member for some reason at some time. But if his dog bites anyone else, that's the end of the relationship. Like my client, most of these people feel convinced that theirs isn't just the right response, it's the only response. But unlike my client, they have neither the desire nor the need to explore why they feel the way they do. In their hearts, they know it's true. Although such relationships undoubtedly occur between humans and all kinds of animals, the longer coevolution of human and canine probably makes such potent and instantaneous bond shifts with our dogs more common. Perhaps humans have been doing this for so long that we couldn't prevent it from happening even if we tried. I don't think that's a good reason not to try, though. If for no other reason than to avoid the potentially crushing pain of regret.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.